Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dave Hurd. Thank you for your outstanding commitment to civic affairs in Iowa, your work for sensible priorities. I appreciate the very kind words. I'm also very pleased. You always get in trouble when you start recognizing all the distinguished people, because you're all distinguished. But I want to especially recognize the Polk County Democratic Chair, Tom Henderson, who's a terrific leader. I saw him in here. Tom, thank you very much. I also want to acknowledge some groups that sometimes are under the radar, but they do immensely important work. There's one group in particular that's very important to, not just to me, but should be for this country, because this issue doesn't get the attention it deserves, and that's the group called Des Moines for Darfur. Thank you so much for being here. I also want to thank P.J. Sesker Green, who leads a group of volunteers to help our men and women in uniform come back and readjust to a life that is often very troublesome. PJ, thank you so much for being here. I also want to thank the One Campaign. I'm wearing their One bracelet. I want to thank them for their commitment to the third world and poverty in Africa and AIDS and so many important issues that I'm going to talk about today. In particular, Jeff Janicek, who is the regional director. Jeff, thank you very much for being here. And it's great being here at the Temple for Performing Arts. I always feel that if a community has spirit in the arts, and this is why I've advocated so much for art in the schools, that if we translate that commitment to music, dance, theater, and enriching the lives of our people, opening their minds, that somehow the troublesome issues that I'm going to discuss today will be better handled if our people are enriched with the arts. I want to speak with you today about a number of issues, urgent threats that America and the community of nations face, global challenges that pose serious dangers to the future welfare of the human race. For decades, we believed that the only apocalyptic threat to human civilization was the possibility of civil war. Now, we know better. We know that poverty and overpopulation affect us all. Refugee crisis, pandemic diseases, climate change, environmental degradation, resource depletion, ethnic and political instability. These are not just the problems of individual nations. They're the problems of an interdependent world. These threats, they're insidious. They may take decades to develop, and they respect no borders. Problems that span time and continents can only be solved through coordinated and cooperative global threats and global efforts. It's called diplomacy. From the deserts of Mesopotamia to the jungles of Central America, civilizations of the past, great and small, have been overcome despite the invincibility of their armies. Famine has wiped out entire peoples. Disease has crippled whole nations. Overpopulation has sunk full continents. In the past, resource shortages destroyed civilizations. Today, they could destroy civilization itself. America, we're the most powerful nation in the world. Yet we're not immune from such threats. It will take vigilance and it will take bold action now to preserve our safety for the future. If we wait 10 or 20 or 50 years to address these problems, it will already be too late. Environmental degradation takes many forms, but the most urgent is global climate change. There is no overwhelming scientific consensus that the planet is getting hotter. This is a fact, not a forecast. The ice caps and glaciers are melting. Sea levels are rising. 300 million human beings live less than 15 feet above sea level. Unless we act now, homes, villages, cities, and entire nations will be submerged. Those not displaced by rising waters may go hungry as our unrestrained addiction to fossil fuels threatens both regional and global food shortages. Already, severe drought has cut the world's maize crops by as much as 15%. And wheat supplies will soon be at their lowest level in 26 years. So in a world where hundreds of millions go to bed hungry, major losses in staple crops foretell a time when we wake up to billions starving. In America, in a nation that has long fed the world, with Iowa taking the lead, catastrophically rising temperatures threaten to decimate our farmland. Here in Iowa, the foundation for an entire way of life could, unless we act, melt away. And meanwhile, the destruction of forests continues at an alarming rate. Forests absorb carbon from the atmosphere, slowing the pollution that causes global warming. They are critical to the air that we breathe and the soil that sustains us. But unsustainable development pollutes that air and erodes that soil, threatening the mesh of life itself. Every species is entangled with the life of others. And as we slash away individual strings, it is increasingly likely that the entire web will collapse. Our unsustainable habits extend across land into the ocean, from sea to dying sea. If we continue on the present course of exploitation, world fisheries will be virtually depleted by the middle of the century. Many once productive fisheries have already been destroyed. Only 23% of world fish stocks are in good condition. More than 1 billion people depend on fish as their main source of protein. We're wiping out hundreds, not only thousands of millions of people, wiping out their food, but also threatening the awe-inspiring diversity of ocean life. Our oceans are a precious, but not an infinite resource. Neither are fresh water supplies. Today, one out of every five human beings on the planet does not have access to safe drinking water. Studies conclude that droughts caused by climate change could leave up to 1.5 billion people without enough water to survive. Changes in the global distribution of fresh water will cause long-term droughts in some of the world's most fertile food-producing regions. India and China could be devastated. In some poverty-stricken parts of the world, like Somalia, governments have been replaced by warlord gangs. Stability has been given way to chaos and even famine. The West African nation of Ghana was long one of the region's most promising economies. The water that once roared through the nation's Volta Dam has been reduced to a trickle. Drought is crippling that nation's economy. In the face of these cascading global threats, Congress and the President have largely been paralyzed. They've been not there. Rather than rallying the nation and the world to face up to the dangers of climate change, the Bush administration claimed for years, against the overwhelming scientific consensus, that the science was unproven. The Vice President wrote our energy policy with oil companies behind closed doors. The Congress has gone along for the ride. The power of lobbyists rather than the power of science has determined our environmental policies. Washington is broken. The dysfunctional relationship between the Congress and the President has made it enormously difficult to tackle problems of this scale. Time has run out. It's now urgent that the Congress stand up to this president now, and that the next president provide energetic leadership to address these issues. We have to be determined, we have to be courageous, far-sighted, and we have to be bold. At stake is our national survival and our survival as a species. Al Gore's tireless and inspiring work to rally the world to confront these grave dangers have now caused the world to recognize that this man received the Nobel Prize. Let us all congratulate Al Gore. I spoke to him 2 days ago. He's enormously excited. Earlier this year, a report issued by 11 retired U.S. generals and admirals confirmed his warnings, Al Gore's warnings, and described the climate crisis as, quote, a serious threat to America's national security. Our national safety is more than enough reason to act, but it's not the only reason that we must. At stake is the health and welfare of the human race. The world once again is looking to America for leadership. We cannot fail. Americans are a generous people and a courageous people. We rescued Europe from fascism and generations from despair. Our farms have been the breadbasket of the world, saved millions of lives through such discoveries as antibiotics and polio. And we are the nation that lit the fire of human freedom. But the Bush administration has failed to live up to our unmatched record of human achievement. Many of the fights that America used to lead are now being lost. Consider the health of humankind. Over the past 35 years, we've seen the emergence of more than 30 new incurable and infectious diseases, such as AIDS and Ebola. At the same time, older pathogens, malaria, cholera, tuberculosis, and many others, have become more resistant to treatment. They are spreading with a vengeance. Malaria alone takes a human life every 30 seconds, most of them children. And disease disproportionately strikes those with the least resources to fight back. More than a billion people survive on less than $1 a day. And nearly half of the world's 2 billion children live in poverty. But we cannot comprehend the crushing burden of global poverty through statistics alone. Even in America, I've walked into communities with no access to clean water. We've all seen shamefully inadequate housing, and we know that even in our own country, there are children that go to bed hungry every night. In my travels abroad, I've seen human desperation firsthand. In the Sudan, I've been to camps filled with families who have lost every worldly possession. I was on the ground in Turkey during a terrible earthquake, where I saw impoverished mothers on their knees digging through rubble for their lost children. I've spent time in Darfur, which today is the best known example of environmental pressures cascading into instability and violence. A prolonged drought decimated the region's grazing lands, and nomadic herders moved south in search of water and food. They encroached upon farming land that belonged to other tribes, igniting the conflict that today has turned into the world's most shameful genocide. So we urgently need to find the courage and the will to address such crises, not only because we're a decent and compassionate people, but because of this inescapable reality. America will never be safe in a world riddled by poverty, by desperation, by hatred, and by violence. A hungry world will also hunger for scapegoats. A thirsty world will thirst for revenge. A world in crisis will be a world of anger and violence and terrorism. And unless and until we have the wisdom and the skill to secure all the nuclear weapons and fissile material in the world, the terrorism could result in unthinkable death and destruction. The global community needs leadership that will take the bold steps necessary to address wide-scale poverty, environmental degradation, societal unrest. I've traveled the world again and again on many international delegations and personal missions, rescue missions. And it has been me, the American, from which the most has been asked. And so it should be. The world expects much from America, and we must expect even more from ourselves. I believe that America alone can rise to the challenge of leading a worldwide effort to avert these global threats. Today, I lay out a new path, and I ask Americans and Iowans to join me. We will craft a new foreign policy adapted to a world of complex challenges, challenges which will require thoughtful and global solutions. No nation can defend its own interests without blending them with the interests of others. It's called international cooperation and seeking common solutions to common problems. This new realism will at once require us to anchor our diplomacy with time-tested, reality-based principles. And it will unleash our potential to achieve dramatic change. The first momentous step will be to partner with developed nations, United Nations, nonprofits, and private sector companies to create a Marshall Plan for the 21st century. We need a massive multilateral effort to assist the developing world in eliminating poverty, protecting the environment, combating pandemics, conserving water supplies, and stimulating economic opportunity. This 21st century Marshall Plan will be composed of several initiatives to face down global threats. First, I will make the United States the world leader in the fight against global poverty. We have to have the foresight and the resolve to honor our United Nations Millennium Goal commitments. And we have to have the audacity to demand that others meet theirs. A commission on the implementation of sustainable development goals, composed of world leaders and prominent experts, should be created to help all countries realize their millennium commitments. When I'm president, the United States will again lead on debt relief and shifting aid from loans to grants. We will focus on primary health care and affordable vaccines, not on funds for dictators. I also believe that the World Bank is not the place for politics. Its only ideology must be the relief of suffering, with a single-minded focus on poverty reduction. The International Monetary Fund must recognize that social safety nets are no barrier. Indeed, they are essential to promoting economic growth around the world. The United States must increase its financial contribution to these international protection and development agencies. We must ask other wealthy nations to do the same. Stimulating small-scale business in poor countries is essential, and we know that that works. Clearly, we should focus more resources on micro-lending. The Nobel Prize winner before Al Gore was Muhammad Yunus. He showed us the way. He gave $50 loans, and those loans to create micro-lending businesses can do more good than a $50 million loan to build highways and palaces for dictators. We need to focus also on education in developing countries. 115 million of the world's children, 60% of them girls, do not receive any schooling, none. In too many countries, a virtual apartheid exists, where women are frozen out of the workforce and civic life. Unleashing the economic power of women through education can be the silver bullet that makes every problem easier to fight. I commend the efforts of the One Campaign, which is increasing awareness of the effects of AIDS and extreme poverty on developing nations. The One Campaign is asking the United States to double our development assistance to 2% of our federal budget. I wholeheartedly support this goal, and as president, I will work to make it a reality. Our aid efforts must be guided by the principles of good governance and protection of human rights. As hard as we fight to fulfill the expectations that we have for ourselves, we have the obligation to expect beneficiary nations to live up to these enduring values like human rights and democracy and trade unionism. The second part of our global initiative will be to take immediate, bold steps towards clean energy. The foundation of our international action will be my comprehensive energy program, which the Sierra Club and the League of Conservation Voters have called the most aggressive of any candidate for the presidency. We should start by instituting a nationwide market-based cap and trade system that reduces carbon emissions in America by 80% by 2040, 30% by 2020. We must lead the world in the development of clean alternative energy, and we must work with other governments and private business to make sure that these technologies are adopted worldwide. Above all, we need to make sure that China and India develop using clean energy. In the upcoming book that I will soon issue, Leading by Example, I outline a specific and comprehensive path domestically and internationally to drastically reduce greenhouse gas emissions and stop the devastation of climate change. If you didn't notice, the price of a barrel of oil, $88, the highest in history today. We need to accelerate research into cellulosic ethanol and other low-carbon input biofuels. And we need to construct distribution networks so that more retailers can offer ethanol and bio-based fuels alongside traditional fuels. As the mandatory national emission cap declines, the market will decide which fossil fuel uses are no longer efficient or should be converted to new technologies. I'm already working. States are taking action because the federal government doesn't. On a regional cap and trade system in the West, in a bipartisan way, along with Governor Schwarzenegger and other governors. This system will limit the amount of greenhouse gases. George Bush doesn't follow the Kyoto protocols, but I want you to know that my state did and does. Along the way, to making my state the clean energy state, which Governor Schwarzenegger disputes, he says it's his, I've learned some important lessons. The most important is that Americans are ready to act. All they need is a president who is ready to act. Once you lead, you find allies in corners that you know never existed. Businesses, nonprofits, activists, churches, former enemies, and future friends. We can build the first true global coalition since America united the world to defeat communism. The third part of my plan is to introduce some Republicans to a basic reality, and that is that the United Nations, not all, the United Nations is a necessary and important framework for building the international cooperation that will be necessary. A framework that will be necessary to confront problems like environmental degradation and poverty. We must reform and invigorate the UN. As a former UN ambassador, your ambassador there, I more than anyone in this race understands the shortcomings of that institution. I've worked to try to solve them. But I also know the incredible power in the legitimacy of international cooperation and what it can do to lend to peacekeeping, to humanitarian relief, to addressing climate change, and to economic development. International cooperation will not always succeed, but I can tell you this, cowboy diplomacy will always fail. We need to work with others now through existing United Nations mechanisms to prepare for the possibility that millions of people could be displaced as a result of global warming-related flooding of deltas and coastal areas. We also have to prepare to shift infrastructure and food production to new regions. We will develop crops that are more resistant to heat and to drought and distribute these new crop strains to valuable regions and vulnerable regions around the world. We must develop cost-effective methods for harvesting fresh water and cleaning up polluted rivers and streams. We need aggressive reforestation programs and protection of tropical rainforests. And we need to develop new international realities to prevent overfishing and species loss. Fourth, my 21st century Marshall Plan will fight cross-border crime. Sophisticated criminal networks running black market trade in arms and drugs and endangered species, counterfeit goods, and human beings threaten the security of us all. We must end slavery forever. Financial assistance to developing countries should be tied to swift and solid progress towards the eradication of human trafficking and sexual slavery. In the United States, and the United States needs to show the world that it can be done, that it can be done by ending slavery here in the United States, where an estimated 50,000 women and children are trafficked each year. It is unacceptable, and I'll direct the necessary efforts to end this. The United States must step up also our efforts to fight global disease. I've proposed unprecedented increases in medical research. One of the great contributions that America has made, should make, and will make again, is to discover new cures to humanity's great afflictions. Cancer, heart disease, malaria, AIDS, TB, autism, all can and must be defeated. Religion today too often tears us apart. But poverty is a case where every single religion on the face of the planet should be able to unite. I refuse to believe that there's a person on this earth that is not disgusted by the fact that a child born in Swaziland, Africa, can only expect to live half as long as a child born in America. If we cannot lead, thank you. If we cannot lead on global action based on this universal agreement, then we're not worthy of the great traditions of human dignity upon which this nation was founded. As we gather our strength for this effort, we have to remember that preserving your popularity is no recipe for inspiring a nation, let alone the world. The success that maybe I've had, I owe in bringing people together and solving problems to taking risks. Sometimes you have to lay things on the line to get results. I recall when one of my constituents, a journalist, a distinguished reporter from the Chicago Tribune, was taken hostage in the Sudan. He was imprisoned because allegedly he was a spy, and he wasn't. But he was captured with two of his aides from the African nation of Chad. They were imprisoned on phony charges of espionage. I had no reason to be optimistic about their release. But the journalist's wife asked me to go to the Sudan to try to get them out. So I went. The dictator of that country, al-Bashir, said, "Okay, you're an American. You can have the American, but the other two from Chad, they must stay." At this point, I could have left with the American. But I said, "No, they all have to come out." It was not an easy choice, but it was the right choice. We went back into negotiation, and I left with all three. At that time, there was no time for polls or consultants, nor is this a time for political calculation. We cannot afford leadership that has not been tested. My colleagues in this race have my respect, but it is a simple fact that the next international deal negotiated by any of them will be their first. We also cannot afford another president who doesn't understand that stubbornness is not strength. And that means consultation with friends, with allies, negotiation with enemies. That is not weakness, that is strength. It is what you need to get things done. It's the basis for restoring America's international leadership. I ask all Americans and all Iowans to join me in rebuilding our global leadership. Together, we need, one, the compassion to commit the necessary resources, the courage to stand fast in the face of inevitable setbacks, and the faith to return, and the faith to return to American principles, equality, freedom, human dignity. These are the values that every American has inherited. Let us be worthy of them. Thank you all very much.